Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from over 30 years combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group and Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks. We are live at commandcontrolpower.com, the first Tuesday of every month, where new episodes are posted weekly. Thanks for listening. So we're resuming our conversation this week discussing residential clients. We have a residential roundtable featuring three of our esteemed colleagues, Adam Rice from Philadelphia, Andy Espo, Call Andy McIntosh Consulting in Boston, and Rami Kramer's Super Rami, all the way from the Netherlands. We're going to pick up our conversation in progress here, talking about specifically recurring revenue for residential clients. And so, Rami, you were talking about how you transitioned into being able to offer a slightly managed service solution for your residential clients, which I think is a big break for a lot of people considering this. So how did you ease into that again?
The first part of what I'm going to talk about, understanding your customer. You have to feel the pain. You have to understand it from their perspective. You have to be empathetic. And that's a big part. If you don't understand your customer, you will never be able to present them a solution that they want to buy. I can tell them all about Time Machine backups that I can monitor for them, and I can monitor their hard drives, and I can monitor their battery, and I can monitor all this stuff, and their mind will get blown about everything that's possible, but they won't understand why they need it.
Mm-hmm. The value equation differs for a residential client. Yeah. When you're talking about a business client and backup, for instance, to use your point, Remy, they're going to be much more concerned with work product because the value of what they're storing in terms of data is their work product. And if their work product goes away, then their business could potentially go away. Whereas the pain point the concern for backup for a residential client is most always going to be their pictures. That's the thing that really has the value. And I would argue that the thing that they don't really appreciate but is just as important is their configuration. What makes that computer theirs versus, you know, I've been doing a backup. I just drag stuff over to a flash drive. It's like, that's not a backup. No, you don't. You know, how long does it take for you to make your computer yours apart from the data itself? And so knowing how to position the value equation to the different types of markets and to the different individual that you could be standing in front of, that's part of the expertise that you have to evolve and develop as you do it.
If you want to sell them a managed service product and want them to pay on a monthly basis, the most important is that you have to present it to them. The way I say it is as a sandwich. So a sandwich is all ready. You can just pick it up and eat it. And what the problem is with what a lot of technicians tend to do is tell them what's in the sandwich. So if I talk to a customer, I say, I've got bread and I've got tomatoes and I've got cheese and I've got Pringles and I've got this and this and this. And would you like something I can make for you? And they're like, okay, what do you sell? And if I just tell them, I've got this very delicious, nutritious sandwich, and there's cheese on it, and there's tomatoes on it, and you are gonna love it. This sauce I've made, it's the best. And then they're gonna wanna buy it. This managed service solution needs to be a sandwich. And that's why I also present it in three different types. So in my business, I have Super Scan, which is just my monitoring actually. I have Super Care, which is that plus phone support and some extras. Super Tailored. That's for people who need tailored support and who need quarterly visits. These three services are three sandwiches that I can present it to the customer as if one thing. They don't see it as all the things that I do for them. And that's a big part of selling a monthly MSP product to a residential customer. But I think that would be the same for business. But most businesses are already used to having some kind of MSP model.
But you're basically saying you're not going to break down all the little pieces for them and confuse them, just give them the total solution so that they just want it.
Exactly.
What happens is that if you tell them that you've got bread and turkey and lettuce and cheese and Pringles, then they're going to say, well, you know what? I think I just want two Pringles. Well, I know, but that's really not going to do what you need done. Yeah, it'll satisfy your hunger for a moment, but it's really not going to take care of what we need to take care of. So I want you to buy the plate with the sandwich and the Pringles.
As a quick side note, while we were all talking here, I wanted to find out in your native language, Rami, how's the word super in Dutch? And it turns out it's super, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a real superhero. But actually, my wife came up with this name. We were on a holiday, and I was thinking, I want to start my own business, and I want to help these customers with the Apple and blah, blah, blah. And we were trying to think of a name, and she said, Super Rami. And I said, no, no way. The problem was, the next day I woke up, and that's the first name I still remembered. So it's so sticky. So that's why I kept it. Branding-wise, it's perfect. Everybody remembers me after one time.
To throw you in the mix, Adam, talking about managed services for residential, have you explored that option in your market? Are you looking at sort of a monthly recurring revenue yet for your residential clients?
I do. I've been pretty successful. It's been about 2 years now since I've been offering essentially Watchmen. For a few folks, I have something a little bit expanded. Reception has been fantastic. I need to figure this out. I'm not a salesperson. That's why I do this rather than, you know, sales. I'm going to sign up for Watchmen. And the next client I see, I'm just going to ask them, would you like this? They said yes. I was totally shocked. I was like, wait, what? And then it happened again and again. But I don't have quite a systematic approach to it. And I do feel that, you know, given how widely I've been able to get Watchmen installed and paid for by my client base, I would love to be offering stuff on top of that as well. I've got a little bit of, you know, software update that a couple people have taken me up on, but I do think that folks would be very interested in knowing that they can get their questions answered, pay for it, rather than having a gray area where it's a quick question, should I ask it or I'll just save it or whatever. So.
Yeah, that's such a good point. It's equitable in both directions. It's like they have these little questions, and some of the clients are not sure about whether they want to ask the question because they're not sure they don't want to be charged. They don't want to bother you if the wheels are going to be spinning and the meter's running. Also, on the other hand, it's a quick question and they think it's silly and they don't want to bother you with it because they realize you're not going to charge. These questions really should get answered, and these questions really help with the relationship building and, you know, your value that you're providing. And by the same token, you should therefore get paid for it, and, you know, those questions should be asked and you should answer and bill accordingly. But that is sort of like easing into managed services aspect that I think we talked about with Yes That Alan way back when. Was just for that sort of thing, like basically allowing that two-way street where the questions would come in and you do get paid for, you know, just being available. I was answering these questions already and I really wasn't charging for most of them. You know, I'd reply to the emails. I'd do a quick call, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and probably not send an invoice and feel bad about it either way. And so this was a way to get into it. So how do you package that, Adam? You have the, you know, Watchmen as like an entry level thing. Do you rebrand that? Do you call that something? How does that work for you?
Yeah, I offer it as a Beacon. I was pretty proud of it when I came up with that branding. And then I like proudly mentioned it to Alan when I next saw him, and he had this look on his face. And I was like, what? Is there a problem? Oh, no, we have an internal feature that we're calling Beacon, it won't be a conflict. So I was like, okay. So it is a good name because you're using it too.
For sure.
But yeah, I think I felt like I really had to like make this real before I could really start promoting it. I made like a trifold brochure and I had it printed. And then when I could show up and hand someone something, I could say, you know, I would like to get notified when you have a problem. I would like to tell you what the solution is. And here's what it is. And then they can hold something in their hand, open it up and look at it. Also have an offering called Bootstrap, which at the moment is Beacon Plus, what used to be Gruntwork. And I have a few people who are using that. And it's working very, very well. Haven't found as much sort of uptake and as many people who really get the value of not having an outdated Adobe Flash installation on their Mac. I feel like there should be some clear ways to communicate that. But a lot of people are more like, I can handle, you know, this piece of it myself. So
yeah,
that's a tougher sell. I think Watchmen is like a real no-brainer. It's the kind of thing that you just feel like, well, shouldn't this just be part of having a computer? Like there should be some system that says, here's everything that's wrong, or, you know, all systems are go. It should be built in. It should say, here's what you need to know about your computer. And better yet, we've notified the people that are responsible for this, you know, your consultant. It just seems like such an obvious kind of piece of the puzzle. And I think that makes it not only like a no-brainer for the client, but it's also an easier sell for us because it's like, I just believe in it so strongly that it makes it easier to sell it as a product. For you, Adam, the second step up would be, you know, what you're calling Bootstrap, you said that's the sort of updates feature, like some level of like management.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Package management. Exactly.
Do you then offer like a, you know, the sort of phone calls like included, like what I call quick fixes, or is that another step up?
I've looked at that and I haven't figured out how to really, you know, explain it. So I think that's my next step is putting that package together and letting people know. Cause I've got some folks I think who would be sort of, who would love to write me that check, you know, and right. feel like they're, you know, they're okay when they send me those questions. I think they feel guilt about it.
I also noticed that some customers, they were actually relieved that I had this offering. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so now you're billing me for all these times I'm calling you. Yes, I am. The approach that Adam did, I think it's very smart. Just do it. Just start. Yeah. Just start with your offering, because you can always change and improve and add stuff. And what I'm also trying to think of is, how can I improve my sandwich? Yeah, my second sandwich, as I said, is super care. Actually, watch my monitoring plus 10-minute support. So what Joe is calling quick fixes. But what I'm adding into the mix there is, now I'm adding grunt work. What I'm telling the customer, listen, customer, I've got this upgrade for your SuperCare sandwich. I don't call it sandwich when I talk to the client, of course. But I've got this upgrade for SuperCare. You don't have to pay anything more, but it's just getting better. And that's something we are used to. If you buy a computer, the software is improving all the time. I mean, I bought my iPhone when it was on iOS 9, and now it's on iOS 10. So that's something I want to offer to my customer as well. So they pay a monthly fee for something, and I'm improving upon it, so they will keep wanting it.
It can be restructured as needed. You know, you can raise and lower pricing. You know, we have clients that got in early and pay a relatively low price. And just to share, you know, some of the numbers where we're at now is we charge $75 for a quick fix. You know, that's a 20-minute call. And that sounds high, maybe, but you know, that's just, you know, sort of like in line with the rest of our hourly rate. For the clients who signed up for just standalone quick fixes, unlimited quick fixes, it's $50 a month. And some clients have, you know, learned how to sort of abuse that. You know, it's maybe two people, like, where we hear from them more than once a month with a 20-minute issue, and they're very careful about having like one issue at a time that's not going to take more than 20 minutes. And they might call us and get that issue solved and call us the next day for the other thing that was already an issue, but they just saved it, you know, and that's, mm-hmm. so they're okay. That's fine. They're working the system, but there's, for every one of those, there's 10 people who, you know, pay us the same rate and they call us once every few months, which is the whole point. And, you know, we get this sprinkled in emails and random little things too. And we hope it's equitable for everybody. But the point is like, you know, you can, right off the top, I think, like you're saying, Rami, to Adam, you probably have 5 or 10 people who are like ready with the, you know, credit card out, like ready to just sign up for this kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure I do. Yeah.
And once you start doing it, you start to develop a set of personal experiences and stories that you start to tell the other clients about, which accelerates your uptake.
It's a great point too. It just helps to have that experience and be able to say, well, you know, I was helping this client with, you know, their backup hadn't run and I called them and we took care of it. And what do you know? But 2 weeks later, their hard drive failed. So it was a really good thing they had this, whatever you're calling it. It's great, you know, to not have to like make those up in theoretical ways, but to actually have examples top of mind. So that's a really great point.
I had exactly that story. I had a customer that had a backup that was failing. And he had smart errors at the same time. I saw that and I sent him an email and I actually called him and I said, listen, this is the problem. Your computer is already failing and your backup is not running. So we have to act now. And what he did, he immediately went to the store, bought a new one, had me come over the same day and I transferred everything over to the new computer. I told him it's not necessary to buy a new computer, but he said, okay, I want to fix this. Let's go for it. That's a story that I tell to my customers every time.
And when it's your story, even if you had read something similar, when it's your story, it comes out as even more genuine and more emotional and heartfelt. And so that telegraphs through.
I didn't want to veer off too much from this, but I did have a question because this is something that I've encountered as well, which is actually for you, Joe. You were talking about some of the clients where they got in at an early rate. That's always an interesting discussion as well when you're ready to push up those rates for some of those early adopters, how to gently ease them into that and the pushback that you might get as a result. It can be an uncomfortable conversation.
One case, we had a client, we were charging, early on, we were charging $29 a month for unlimited quick fixes. And at that point, we were charging $50 a quick fix. If you just have one quick fix every 2 months, like it's better to sign up for this unlimited thing. And, you know, we thought that was how we're positioning it. And so we signed up a couple of clients that way. This one guy who really just like abused the whole spirit of it. And, you know, at one point he was like, "Did you get my email? Like, I emailed you and I didn't hear anything back." And this was like 2 hours later. It was like, "Did you get my email earlier?" He has the complete wrong expectations. I don't know how I sent the signal that he should expect like immediate service for $29 a month. Like, yeah, you've got me on a chain or something like that. So anyway, because of his like outsized expectations and because we could not basically reconcile that, I suggested to him that this was no longer a good fit. Since we're not able to meet your expectations, we recommend, you know, discontinuing this service. And I positioned in a way where like it was not in his interest to keep the service. And so he agreed and we basically cut him loose. He's still a client. He's a happy client because it was just not worth it for us, you know, at that rate to have this guy like who expected to be able to get us anytime with a moment's notice. In the other cases, it's been more of a restructuring. So like we've been repositioning everything under the umbrella of what we call CIMAC Prime. And then there's just different sort of like levels of that, different amounts of hours you can tack on. But we've discontinued some older plans, which we called seasonal checkups. So that was where like in theory, we would be seeing you every 3 months, you know, or something like that, and doing all your updates and checkups. We find this is a much better fit for most people to just do it hourly and monthly. That is an interesting point that like you may have to have that conversation with those early adopter clients and say, well, you know, we raise the rate, but you get more value and, you know, maybe you can position it and maybe give them a discount and kind of get them on board. But it's worth it to just start signing people up. And if you have to rearrange it, you can later.
What I am doing right now, because I also upped my rates, is that I give the current customer a 6 month grace period. But what I do is I put the current rate on their bill and the grace period is actually a discount now. And there
is a
date stamp in the bill. So they will see I will pay this rate until the 1st of July.
Yeah, that's a great point. Discounting, you know, you've got to show it as a discount. So it starts to get them used to seeing that higher number on there. And the sooner you do that, the better. You know, so you raise the rate, you raise new clients pretty much instantly at that point.
Yeah, of course. New clients are on the new rate.
Right. And then speaking of having this sort of story to tell, like making that real, you can then start to communicate to your existing clients, this rate has been in effect since, you know, this date. We've been charging this since, November 2016. And they start to realize, well, this is okay. I've been enjoying this, you know, lower rate for a while now.
I also think it depends on how much the increase is, because I just increased with 10 euros. So that's about $11. So that's not a very big increase. But if you like increase by 50% or 100%, that's a different story. Then you have something to explain. I didn't really explain to anyone. I just put it in their bill as a discount. And I don't expect any resistance, actually.
That's a great idea. I wonder if you could do that every 6 months.
Yeah.
If there's a limit.
I think that's a brilliant point that the raise amount is lower. You really don't need to explain it. And it's an awkward thing to have to explain, to send out an email saying, well, we've raised our rates. I mean, there's no good way to say that. You know, you can't spin it in a way that says like, we're now delivering even more value through a higher rate, you know.
I have to disagree in one part, because we just did a rating. First of all, what I did was any client who we had seen in the past 2 years, we actually sent a piece of mail to, and with a letter from me saying why we were raising our rate. I thought that sending a real piece of hard email was respectful more than just sending an email. One of the reasons that I use to justify this, and it's true, is the cost of talent has gone up significantly. The cost to employ trained, seasoned engineer in our space has gone up significantly in the past 3-4 years. And there's a certain amount that we can absorb, but there's beyond a point we can't. And everybody really seemed to understand that. That's something that they could appreciate.
That's a good point. I mean, it does give you an opportunity to say, you know, to just tell them what that value is and stuff. But I mean, wouldn't it be nice to like not have to justify it and just to kind of, you know, I mean, I guess it's, you know, here's an opportunity for a survey. Do you guys agree that if it's a $10, you know, rate, let's say raise, you don't really need to like even notify the client. It just kind of goes in the bill and it, you know, if they want to question it, they can.
If you don't do it immediately, if there's a grace period, I think that's fine.
Right.
That's my opinion. I don't know about.
I would know. I just feel it's respectful to notify your clients if you're changing their rate. I think to not tell them and to suddenly have the new, you know, however you do it, if you warn them it's of a certain date, or as Ramey's doing, you give them a grace period and you're showing them. But they have to be on notice. Otherwise, you know, when the next month they're going to get a bigger bill and they're going to, it doesn't feel fair to me to not tell them.
Right. No, I agree that with a grace period, I think that would work. Like where, you know, if they're not looking at the bill, that's, you know, that's kind of on them. But if you include it on the bill, you know, noting, you know, it's the new rate is there and you've got a line item discount showing that it is a discount, you know, through whatever date or something like that, grace period discount. I think that's a valid way to do it. If you give them enough lead time, if you raise it more than a certain amount, you do have to specifically call attention to it. But I don't know what that amount would be. I think, maybe, you know, if you raise it by, you know, $25 or $50 an hour, certainly.
It's a little easier to swallow for that smaller incremental raise. Also, on top of what Andy had said about hiring talent and the cost of that going up, even a one-man shop can say that, because that one-man shop has to go get training, has to get certified, and has to keep up with the latest, and that costs money too. So that's, you know, whatever Andy's saying as having a team of people can still apply to anybody listening that might be saying, well, I'm just one guy.
It's a great point, because your value is still going up.
Right.
And I think that it's important for the clients to understand that we're just not hobbyists who are doing this because it's fun. This is our profession. And we get trained, as Jerry said, we get training and we put time into this. We build our expertise. And it's no different than a lawyer or a physician or any other professional.
What I tend to say when people ask me about their rates is, how fast do you want to be helped? I don't know, within a week or within this time. And then I say, okay, if my rate would be half my current rate, then my agenda would be booked until 6 months from now. So you can choose. It's just the market, the way the market works. So if I raise my rate and my agenda is still pretty full, then there is a market for it. That's the way I explain it to my customers. And that's an explanation that you can also say when you're a one-man shop.
I've been on what I think is a typical sort of journey with my consulting rate. And something really nice about residential consulting and just, you know, developing these personal relationships over time. Some folks that were great clients and that I wanted to work with, they've been working with at a ridiculously low rate. I was comfortable saying, frankly, my rate's going up because I need to stay in business and I can't at this rate.
Right.
And it was totally, you know, like that's the situation, you know, and they were completely understanding. Like, oh, okay, of course. You know?
So delivering a tremendous amount of value and a tremendous amount of skill, that shouldn't be given away because they're nice people. You deserve to make the living that you're entitled to.
Right.
It depends on your lifestyle, of course. For every rate, there's a lifestyle that fits, I guess.
You certainly don't want to be living in a van down by the river.
I don't.
It depends on which river. Let me put it that way. Adam, something you had written about the level of activity between what you're calling regular clients and wealthy clients, that where we kind of started this discussion, you know, in part one, you found a lot of activity in between there. So I guess what you're saying is the sort of like breadth of the market was a lot wider and broader. Like
I started my consulting with some of the real typical things that you do, sitting down, doing these exercises to define my market. You know, someone I was talking with said, well, who is your ideal client? I said, that's a fantastic question. Mm-hmm. And so it was really a process of discovery. I'd ask, well, would I hire someone to come and fix my computers? And like, no, even if I didn't know what I was doing, I don't think I would. And financially, where I'm at, I'd probably just let the problem be the problem or you know, call my brother or something. So I have a client who is residential nominally, but they're, you know, the spouse of an executive of a global corporation. And so I come in and, you know, they've got the infrastructure and they've got, so that's the highest possible end that I've encountered. And then there's the folks who are not going to pay my current rate, but there's just a lot of room in between. You know, I didn't realize sort of how many people would be happy to come, write a check, you know, just ask me how much that cost after, you know, 3 or 4 hours and not even blink and write a check. I was obviously hopeful because I quit my job and started the business, but I didn't realize that there'd be just so much room. I guess that's kind of what I was referring to.
Winds up being one of those, if you build it, they will come. You know, if you're good at what you do and you can handle clients well, and you have the technical expertise, then there's a market for what we're doing.
You know, we've all probably found that people are less price sensitive than, by and large, than maybe we had expected. You know, then again, as we were talking in the beginning of the show, like, you know, is that just a thanks to just the where we all happen to be operating our practices out of, you know, just the local markets. But I like to think that this applies more broadly as well, that in any given area, there are more people than you might expect that are willing to pay for a high value service, and they're willing to pay more for better service. As long as you're not trying to compete on price, I think that there's a market for it. I guess there's no other way than just trying it out. So can you guys, you know, jump in and offer any other kind of like ideal type of client description, or how do you find these, if you're identifying what your ideal client would be, have you had some success in doing that?
We've used our relationships with the Apple stores for years, which has been a great resource for us as part of the ACN community. We've also leveraged the referrals from client to client. If they're using us and they enjoying us and they think that they'll tell their friends. It's very effective.
That's also a big difference between residential and business as well, is the amount of referrals you get from residential far exceeds. I mean, you almost don't have to do marketing if you do things right. It can expand very quickly amongst, like, let's say, schools, or, you know, people that go to take their kids to the same schools or live in the same town, and it's boom, you're out there in moments. And Joe, yes, and I have found that in specific towns in the area where we're just big in a particular town because all of the parents have referred us to one another.
It is a great aspect of residential versus business, because, you know, the businesses, I mean, you imagine that they're in their networking groups and, you know, talking to colleagues in business and stuff like that. What are the chances that one business knows another business that's 100% Mac based, you know, and looking for help in certain ways where you can provide value? It's a lot more likely that, you know, one home is friends with another home and they happen to both use Macs. It's just a lot more common, I think, in a lot stronger of a network. You know, I've talked a lot about this in the past, but it does lead to a much stronger base of clients and a much stronger network to have, you know, organic type referrals like that.
They trust you implicitly. And if there's ever a problem with one client where they're like, well, I don't think he did the right thing, and blah, blah, the other ones are going to say, well, we've never had that problem. And if he's saying you should do this, or he's saying he did that, then he's probably right. And so you can get that kind of crowdsource support.
I think there's also another very big opportunity in the residential area. Most of my clients are the decision makers of their business. So there is a big opportunity if they are changing to Mac, or they're already working with Mac in their business. You're working at their home, but you can easily get into the business they are running. Some of my clients have 10 businesses they are running, mm-hmm. and they can get me in there. And that's also an opportunity. I haven't explored it very much yet, but I think there is a big opportunity there.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of that myself. It's happened a handful of times, and I sort of have an intuition that I work with folks who do have those connections to offices that could use support, and I'm interested in exploring how to have those conversations.
How big of an opportunity do you think there is if you work with residential customers who are business owners?
One thing that we find where there's an inroads on the business side, if we have a residential client that owns a business, they may not have to be a Mac shop, because we find a lot of inroads on the iOS and mobile game. And these companies that say, well, we only have a couple Macs here, but we all have iPhones or we all have iPads. And how do we manage those better? And that's where my inroad is on the mobile game for sure.
We've had sort of mixed results with that. We've certainly picked up some really nice corporate clients through that kind of referral, as long as they have enough of the kind of work that we have expertise in. We're not a Windows shop. We're pretty much all Mac. So they would have to have that kind of opportunity for us for it to be a good fit. You know, oftentimes you'll have a client who's a CEO and he'll say, God, I'd love to have you guys work with our company and I'd be glad to bring you in, but we just, you know, we run on Windows. And so it's like, well, bummer. From talking to guys like Ben and Phil out in LA, it happens a lot more there because the dominant industry there runs on Mac, where here, mostly a lot of financial services. And so you're much more likely to have a business running on Windows, and therefore the cross-pollination opportunity to be more limited.
So if you have a client where you're working with them on a Mac level, obviously, and they say that ultimate question, do you do PCs? And you guys have an answer of yes and look to take that client on? For like on the business level, let's say they have like a small office with 6 PCs and they know you do a great job on their Macs. Do any of you take those clients on? I'm just curious.
No,
no,
I don't.
No, I politely decline.
Yeah. I mean, we have a great Windows guy that we work with who would refer them to. What's great is that we work with him on a number of cross-platform clients. We'll bring him in, he brings us in. I'm always very careful to say that, you know, we don't sell ourselves as a Windows shop, and it's not our expertise.
If I am asking my rate and I'm trying to figure it out on a Windows PC, I'm doubling the time on it. And I think a Windows guy should even be cheaper. They are actually paying four times what they would be paying a Windows guy.
That relates to the raising of our rates. You know, that's a point I was going to make earlier when you talk about justifying a rate increase. When you have these clients that are getting a super good deal and you worry about how they're going to take it when you raise your rate, you know, one way to position that is, well, used to be that it would take me twice as long to do something because I was just starting out, and, you know, now I'm twice as efficient. So I can do the same job in say half the time. And so maybe I'm charging double now, you know, so the value proposition is still there, but it also, you get the benefit of, it takes me less time to actually do it, get to the solution faster. So yeah, the same thing works in reverse. If I'm flailing on a Windows box, you know, trying to remember, you know, what does the registry do again? You know, and so that's really not my comfort level. And so, yeah, I agree. I refer them to a PC colleague, preferably one who doesn't do Mac. So as we wrap up here, part two, as we were starting out, we considered framing this as the good, the bad, and the ugly. We've talked a lot about the good aspects of this and some of the challenges, but does anybody have any sort of really ugly stories to leave us on a sour note here as we wind down?
great way to wrap up the show.
Always leave them wanting less. Yeah.
Right. Any other pitfalls that we want to just call attention to that people should consider, things that illustrate this?
I will say that we've had just recently a little spate of older clients who are working in businesses. I don't know if they're retired or they're bringing their expertise to these businesses. In two cases, they were there. There are kids' businesses whose businesses are successful. They're working in the businesses. They need all this help, but they don't know what they need. They don't know how to frame the question. We've wound up in like this billing thing with a couple of them, and it's been almost the identical thing. And it was like we walked into a mess. We cleaned it up, but they didn't feel like it should have taken as long as it did, because they have no tech understanding. They're not tech, you know, they've never been involved in this. And so, you know, you spend 3 hours and you bill them accordingly, and then they squeak at the bill, and then you have to have the conversation with the kid, who's almost invariably like, oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Don't worry about it. We'll get it paid. But there's all this hard feeling, and you're saying to the kid oftentimes, you know, we feel badly about this because we're the resource that they need desperately. And oftentimes the kid's like, I know, you're totally right. I don't know why you're gonna like that. You know, sorry, and you know, whatever. Just seen a few of them recently.
You're trying to help the client or the end user anyway, save face. But sometimes it comes down to like, you know, what took so long? Well, this person is stubborn or you know, just had a hard time understanding, or, you know, and sometimes it comes up where, and I think you mentioned, Andy, there's a business client, the business owner or the point of contact, you know, how often does so-and-so ask you about, forget their password? You know, you're like resetting their password. Like, how many times a month does that happen? You know, it seems like this question keeps coming up, or, you know, somebody forgets about how to connect the VPN or...
I've got a few residential clients who I think are having memory loss issues. And so that's raising some sort of ethical questions for me. You know, how do I work with them? How do I take their money as they just continue to forget or, you know, reset their passwords? Just recently, I've had somebody who changed their iCloud password. You know, they needed it, didn't know it, reset it. And then all of the files on their desktop disappeared. Oh, I know what just happened. Oh, no.
Yes. You
know,
like,
as a son of someone who died from Alzheimer's, my dad, I've had some experience with clients with dementia. And the best advice I can give anybody is to form a relationship with someone else in the family or in the business, or wherever they are, when there is the eventual dispute over something, that they know that you're not taking advantage of anybody, and that there's someone who is, you know, a rational, reasonable, you know, touch point.
Yeah. I've also have another ugly story. Any one of you familiar with OneDrive? I have advised it to a client, and I was so, so sorry. They had Office 365, so you get OneDrive for free with that. So I said, oh, you don't need Dropbox because you're already paying for OneDrive and blah, blah, blah. And I advised them to use it. But it was such a pain because she had all these file names that were like whole sentences and spaces at the end before the dot. And yeah. OneDrive just doesn't swallow a lot of that. In some cases, it just stops working without notifying you if there's one of those files. And she had hundreds, literally hundreds of those files with wrong names. A couple of months later, I had to transfer them back to iCloud is what I advise them now. So OneDrive is a pain when it comes to file names. It's horrible.
I think the only downside on the iCloud side is the amount of storage that you get for free. Not that it's expensive to upgrade, but in comparison to some of the other services, you're getting a smaller amount of storage space.
What I do really like about it, if you compare it to Dropbox, is that you can upgrade in three tiers. If you take Dropbox, you have to pay the whole $10 per month to get the 1 terabyte. Mm-hmm. But a lot of clients of mine, they just need 50 or 200 gigabytes.
Sure.
And I think that's a very good proposition of Apple to have these first two tiers, especially in the beginning when you're just starting to use a cloud service.
Adam, you brought up a very interesting point about the clients in the residential space with the memory loss issues, because that's, I think, something that is unique to residential versus business. You'd see a lot more of that dealing with people in their home. And it occurs to me that the ones that I have the most challenge with are the ones where the clients who are beginning to experience memory loss but aren't really aware of it yet becomes very contentious very quickly when, you know, they're like angry that they can't, you know, the problem happened again, or they don't understand it, when you just do your best. And I think, Andy, that's really good advice, that form of a relationship with an ally in the family to be able to be there and understand at least where you're coming from, so you're not, there's no question that you're doing right by the client in that situation.
Well, it's a real tough challenge, because what we do comes at the confluence of something that oftentimes they don't understand well to begin with, especially if you look at age and the generational gap with technology and, you know, ability to comprehend it. So you take someone who might be, you know, not as proficient at technology in the first place, and then you layer on, you know, sort of a progressive memory loss, you know, or you know, issue like that. They might be aware that they're having a problem, that they, you know, most people do have some understanding of it, but what they might not realize, it's coming into play in that circumstance right there with you. And they'll get very upset and very frustrated, or they'll feel like they're being taken advantage of, or they'll get the bill. Like, this happened to us once about 5 or 6 years ago. We had an elderly client Max did some work with, got the bill and couldn't remember who we were, and called the credit card company and forced the charge to be reversed. Wow. And it was a whole, it turns out, I mean, luckily there was someone who I had gone to school with, and it was a whole big deal that he had contested this charge, and we had to jump through all these hoops, and it was crazy.
I can see that becoming a, you know, an ugly situation for sure in that scenario. This has been a great conversation. I've learned a lot. I think our listeners will learn a lot about the pros and cons of working with residential clients. I just want to thank everybody for joining us in this special residential roundtable once again. Adam Rice from Philadelphia, Andy Espo, Call Andy McIntosh Consulting in Boston, and Ramey Kramer, Super Ramey, all the way from the Netherlands. So thanks so much, guys, for joining us.